Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hi, my name is Joe, and I'm the host of Tales, Trails, and Taverns. In this show, Rob and I like to take an active approach by hiking out to haunted, creepy, and abandoned places. We love the adventure and discovering the dark history of the locations we visit. We release a new episode every Friday on Apple, Spotify, and Patreon, as well as bonus episodes on varying Tuesdays. But don't just take my word for it, we have great listeners who have left some awesome reviews.
Oh, I love adventure, but during those times when I can't get to the outback, I like to listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns. Those boys dig deep into the dark history, and their first-hand experiences really delivers the excitement. This podcast is a beaut.
Back when I was the governor, I didn't have time to listen to podcasts. But now that I'm retired from politics, I can focus on my two passions, pumping iron and listening to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
It doesn't matter who we are. What matters is that we all listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
I love listening to the podcast. Wait, what's a podcast again?
It's an audio show you listen to.
Oh, like on the radio?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay. I love listening to Tulips and Tiddlywinks.
It's Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
And what do you do again?
Hike to scary places and drink beer.
Sounds terrifying. Okay. I like to listen to Terrifying Tea Time, but not on the radio.
Okay, thank you. You did great.
You're welcome. Say, you're kind of cute. Is there a Mrs. Tales, Trails, and Taverns?
Now you get it?
No actual celebrities or political figures have endorsed Tales, Trails, and Taverns. All the reviews you've heard were written, poorly, by the host, George Lennox, as well as the impersonations of celebrities, politicians, and movie characters. I meant no harm. Please don't sue me.
Looking for something scary, morbid, frighteningly insane.
Get out!
Every form of horror, from ghosts, cryptids, and curses, to deals with the devil, giant insects, and more. Join us at Haunted Tales, our weekly horror anthology series. And let me tell you a story.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us again.
Yeah, it's always good to hang out once again with you guys.
Yeah. Get some weird and brutal stories and maybe a yummy cocktail.
Oh, yeah. Always got to have the cocktail.
Right. I'm kind of excited about this one because I think it might be pretty tasty, but we'll find out.
Yes, we will.
What are you going to be telling us about story-wise today?
So I'm going to be talking about the Rust shooting.
Rust shooting. Oh.
With okay. The very famous actor.
Oh. I don't think I know,
you know this story.
About that.
I think everyone
I probably
knows
do.
This story. It'll,
but Rust it'll doesn't sound familiar. So.
Okay. What are you going to be telling us about today?
I'm going to be talking about some interesting cave paintings.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yes. And they've been a part of the Australian culture for a really long time.
Aborigines.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So to go with my story on cave paintings, I brought the Bright and Rainy cocktail, which is made of 1.5 ounces of gin, 1/2 ounce of peach schnapps, 1/4 ounce of lime juice, and 3 ounces of ginger beer or ginger ale. I chose ginger beer. And then the steps are to throw it in a glass with some ice and mix it all together. Not complicated. It's like one of the easiest drinks to put together, I think. So, all right. Are you ready to taste it I think it's going to be good. Yes. That's my prediction.
I think so too, but I have a feeling the peach schnapps aren't going to be.
I was a little
fine because of the ginger beer, but
right. We'll I think it's going to be weird, the combo between peach and ginger beer, but I do like peach and ginger together. Okay. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah. I'm not picking up a lot of the schnapps, but it's tasty.
No, not at all. I think it would definitely have a little bit of a different flavor with ginger ale because the ginger beer makes it a little more pungent and spicy. But I think overall it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty tasty.
Yeah. I have to pause for a second because my heater just kicked off and I'm going to get really, really cold here in a minute. So hold on a second, bud.
Okay.
And yes, the heater is still broken. The furnace is still broken. And I brought a big radiator heater down to warm it up and plugged it into the power strip an hour and a half ago, and it tripped the power strip. But I didn't know that because I was upstairs. So I attempted to heat the room, but didn't heat the room. So I brought another heater down, but its cord isn't long enough. Anyway, that just kicked off because it was on that power strip too. So rule of thumb is don't plug anything but the shit.
I don't think you guys have any newer power strips, like, right? You guys have a bunch of like ancient ones there.
No. This is brand new. I mean, it's like a year old.
Oh, not too bad.
It's new enough that it should work, but
it shouldn't trip.
Space heaters pull a lot of power. And if you try and put anything on a power strip with a space heater, it trips it really easy. So
better than tripping the breaker, though, and turning all the lights off.
Good news is that I am right in here with the breaker panel, so I could just go turn it back on real quick. But anyway, okay. Now we can get back to my story. Get to my story, I should say. Okay, so as I said before, we're going to talk about cave paintings. Now, I know, Declan, that you really like to look up images while I'm telling the story, but I want you to wait. Don't want you to look anything up.
Okay.
Until I tell you it's okay, because I want you to be surprised when you see them.
Okay.
So don't Google anything. But I will tell you when you can. I know it's going to be really hard, but I will tell you when you can look. So are you ready? Let's go.
Yes.
In the northwestern part of Australia, there are cave walls that have been painted with some very interesting images. There are thousands of images depicting things like ships and animals, including extinct animals like the Tasmanian tiger. But some of the most interesting images have a very unique humanoid appearance, and they are called Wangina. That is what I'm going to be talking about specifically, are the Wangina cave paintings.
Sorry to cut you off real quick, but it's kind of slightly related. So the Tasmanian tiger has been extinct since like the 60s, I think, or 50s or something like that. But I follow this guy on YouTube. He's a biologist who specifies in extinct animals, and he's like on the lead to finding one in the wild, he believes. Like, he talked to these like these guides in, I can't even remember where, but he talked to some local guides, and they're like, yeah, we've seen them, this is like exactly what they look like. And
cool,
not be fully extinct, but we'll see.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm not going to be talking about the animals in these cave paintings, but it is pretty cool to think that it's not extinct and there's still some out there, and they're just hiding really well
because they're fucking cool looking.
They are cool looking. I've seen pictures of them, like, you know, old pictures, whatever. The images that I'm talking about, the Wangina, are believed to represent mythological beings and were painted by the prehistoric inhabitants of the Kimberley region. The paintings are part of a local Aboriginal culture and have been for centuries. They are still a part of their daily lives as well. Before I get into what the images look like, I want to talk about what the images represent to the community that cares for them. The Wangina paintings date back to around 4,000 years ago and are believed to represent the creation of the world and a significant change in the regional climate. The art style appears to have begun around the time of the end of a very long period of drought. So there'd been a lot of drought, and then all of a sudden the climate becomes wetter. There's distinct monsoon seasons, and that is when this art style seems to have emerged. The Aboriginal people have a clear and sacred understanding of the Wangina's origins and significance. The Wangina are considered ancestral spirits and landscape creators by the Aboriginal peoples who have lived in the Kimberley region for tens of thousands of years. Not only do the images represent the spirits responsible for the change in climate thousands of years ago, remember this is 4,000 years ago when these paintings are dated to, but they also are believed to be crucial in maintaining the current climate, especially the change in seasons from dry season to wet season when the monsoons start. That's my drink, bright and rainy. The rain is in there. They're deeply tied to the land, water, and sky, believed to control the rains and ensure the fertility of the land. Each site of these paintings have a specific name, and they're treated with great respect by the indigenous people in the area. Although the original paintings were created thousands of years ago, the paintings are still a significant part of the local indigenous culture. Each year, the Wangina images are renovated by the person believed to be the oldest descendant of the original painter. So these paintings were done, and then they were done 4,000 years ago, but they're painted over every year, and it's part of like the descendants' responsibility of who they think the original painter was. The images are repainted over the existing image using the same colors and hues. In fact, some sites have as many as 40 layers of paint on them. It is believed that by painting over the images, the spiritual essence of the Wangina are preserved and the monsoon season will return, bringing water back to the area. Each image is painted with limited colors of black, red, and yellow on a white background. The colors,
you know, they use like the same style of paint, because like I'm sure when these were made they were using charcoal and water for black, but like,
right, I'm not sure. I didn't really see anything in my research that said like they tried to use the same formula for the paint. Just
like
that they use
Rust-Oleum spray paint,
right? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, hopefully they're using something similar than the original, but I don't know. Okay. The colors are believed. What is it, Lulu or Frank?
Both of them, but
Lulu's both. Oh,
slamming the charger into my bedside table, and sounds like someone's knocking.
She's knocking. She's like, "Hey, I'm here. I'm your producer, and I'm telling you to listen."
Sure. I guess so.
Yeah. The colors are believed to symbolize water and blood. Some of the images are vertical while others are horizontal depending on the size of the rock it's painted on. So the humanoid image is sometimes standing up and sometimes laying down, but that doesn't appear to be like related to the image itself more than the rock it's painted on. The figures may be alone or in a group. So what do the Wangina images look like? Now you can Google it if you want to.
And right. How do I spell this?
It's spelled WAND, like wand, JINA.
Okay, let's see. Ooh.
So, God, as I said before, they are humanoid in appearance but have very distinct features. Wangina figures are depicted with large upper bodies and enlarged heads. The head is surrounded by a red halo or a horseshoe-shaped motif. The area around the halo may include lines or dots radiating out from the halo. The eyes of each figure are very large, while they are often shown without mouths.
So I'm looking at this right now, and the one I have pulled up looks like Squidward from SpongeBob, the way it's got the giant eyes and like the droopy long nose. it looks like Squidward.
Yeah, that's true. It's funny that you say that. I didn't even put that together, but yes, I can see that now.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. The limbs of the figures are typically depicted in a less distinct manner, and the feet are often shown as footprints. Let's discuss what some of the current theories are surrounding these images. First off, the shape of the heads and the eyes are very large and look extremely similar to many drawings done after reported alien experiences.
Yep.
Right. In fact, some UFO researchers believe the Wangina paintings look nearly identical to drawings done by the children of the Ariel School UFO incident that occurred in 1994 and that we covered a long time ago in episode 20. Do you believe that was over 100 episodes that we talked about that?
That's crazy. Almost 200.
Yeah, we're at 120. I think this is
127. Yeah, you're right. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Crazy.
Doesn't feel like it.
I know. So if anybody hasn't listened to episode 20 yet, if you're going in reverse order, picking and choosing this, you know, some people believe that these drawings that were, again, done over 4,000 years ago look really similar to the drawings done in 1994 in a UFO experience. Of course, some believe the halo represents a space helmet, going with the UFO theme. Yeah. It's believed the lack of mouths on the faces indicates the figure's ability to communicate telepathically. Why would you need a mouth if you can communicate telepathically?
Similar to the Ariel.
Right, exactly. However, some of the ancestral roots in these images believe that the lack of mouth explanation is that if the mouth were there, it would be more significant to the seasonal changes, and that if the mouth was there, then the rain would never stop. So pick and choose which one you want to believe. If it's telepathic or an open mouth means it's going to be raining forever, which would be a bad thing. The ancestral explanation of the lions coming off of the halo representing thunder that accompanies the rain. So that's the dots or the squiggly lines that come off around the horseshoe or the halo. As people are always looking for explanations surrounding ancient culture, it definitely makes us wonder what the original artists were trying to convey through their paintings. Are the Wangina figures spirits that control the weather? Or were the Aboriginal ancestors in Australia visited by aliens 4,000 years ago? I don't know. To add more fuel to the question fire, why are similar images found all over the world from ancient times? So, like, cave paintings in other countries in Mexico, South America, look very similar to the Wangina paintings from 4,000 years ago.
I'm going to look up the Dogon tribe drawings because they...
Oh, yeah. Which goes back to episode one. We're just going to go back and revisit all of our old episodes. Maybe we should do that one.
I don't know. I don't like it when podcasts do that. Like,
I know.
The week of New Year's, they're always like, best
yes.
of 2024. It's like, I listen to every single one of these episodes. I know.
I know. I don't need to listen to it again.
Yeah.
Christmas and New Year's weeks, like, basically from the middle of December through the middle of January for most podcasts are just reruns, which drives me crazy. And so to all our fans out there and everyone listening, you got new episodes every week.
Yep.
And we have not taken a break in 2.5 years. You got a new episode every week.
So I'm looking at the Dogon tribe stuff, and the heads aren't really that similar. They have big eyes with kind of like a dome-like thing, and they also have like the lines or striations on the body.
Oh, okay.
But it's not as similar as I would have thought.
Okay. Either way, that's ancient cultures all over the world have very similar drawings that are distinctly different from the humans that made them. That's the really wild and weird thing. Like, if aliens are a new thing, and I'm not saying that they are, because we've talked about alien UFOs reported hundreds of years ago, it's definitely makes you go, well, what happened 4,000 years ago? There's a lot of unanswered questions, and we'll never know the answers. I firmly believe we'll never know.
How long ago was that decimated tribe one that you did that was like nuclear radiation or something like that? Was that?
I don't remember when that
was. It
was
like longer than 2000, I believe, like 2000 years ago. But
that is a great question that would require me to go. That's going to take some.
Yeah, it's okay. If you want to know, then go ahead and listen to that episode and come up with your own conclusions.
With which, if I could find the episode that was. Dang. Oh, that would have been episode 102.
Okay.
And now I'm going to go back and see. I don't know. I don't know if I really talked about it. It was a long time ago. We'll just say that. Yeah. Episode 102 talked about it. It was Mohenjo-Daro and the civilization that they found that just disappeared, and they have no idea where it went. And there's weird, like, glassified sand that they think could have only come from like a very high temperature such as a nuclear explosion, which couldn't have happened back then.
Or something like that. Yeah,
just weird stuff. Yeah. So old ancient stuff that leaves a lot of questions.
Yes, there seems to be plenty of that
for sure. Well, tell me this shooting story that you think I know, but it doesn't ring a bell.
It'll come to you once I talk more about it.
Okay.
So, Rust is a movie co-created by Joel Souza and Alec Baldwin, which began filming in October 2021. The movie was set in 1800s Kansas, featuring Alec Baldwin as Harland Rust, who comes out of hiding as an outlaw to rescue 13-year-old nephew Lucas Hollister, who is set to be hung due to manslaughter, which is foreshadowing.
Oops.
After rescuing his nephew, the two must escape bounty hunter Fenton Lang. While the film officially premiered at the Polish Film Festival Camera Image on November 20th, 2024, it has yet to be released on any streaming services for what I'm about to talk about.
Right.
I spent 15 minutes trying to figure out where I could watch this movie, but I don't think it's out for public viewing.
Well, I think it will be eventually. I mean, if they just premiered it like 3 weeks ago at a movie thing.
This is in November. I mean.
Oh, I thought you said December.
No, November 20th.
Oh, but remember, everybody takes December off except us. So we have to still work.
So the movie had a budget of about $6 to $7 million, and filming began on October 6th, 2021 at the Bonanza Creek Ranch in Bonanza City, which is an abandoned town 13 miles south of Santa Fe, New Mexico. Filming was scheduled to last 21 days, which I feel like is a really short amount of time for a movie.
I agree. I think that's real quick.
Yeah, less than a month. That's, oof. Hannah Gutierrez-Reed was hired as production assistant and lead armorer, meaning she was in charge of all the weapons on site, including guns, knives, and any ammunition used in the film. This was Hannah's second film as lead armorer, but on her first movie, The Old Way, she gained a poor reputation for firing one of the prop guns unprompted and without warning, which caused Nicolas Cage to walk off set for the day.
Oh my, oh wow, okay.
Yeah.
Whoops.
The safety on set started off subpar before filming even began. Crew members claim that firearm safety protocols were not distributed with the call sheets or filming schedules. With the film being a Western, guns were a predominant part of the filming. After filming had started, the safety concerns continued. Alec Baldwin's stunt double was handed a revolver and was told that the prop gun was cold, meaning that it was either unloaded or unable to fire. But the stunt double was able to accidentally fire two blank rounds.
Shit.
Yeah.
That's a big boo-boo.
Big no-no. And you'd think that incident would kind of make people rethink their safety protocols. But
yeah,
following that incident, the prop master accidentally shot herself in the foot with a blank round.
Oh, good gravy.
So blank cartridges contain a propellant like any normal firearm cartridge. However, they don't contain a bullet. Since there's still propellant, anything like holding the gunpowder in the casing or any debris in the gun could still be sent out of the barrel at the gun at a high speed, which is what happened with the prop master.
Mm.
On October 21st, 2021, the crew were rehearsing a gunfight inside the church on set. However, this was after seven disgruntled crew members walked off set for unknown reasons. I'm assuming safety concerns. But there were also, like, apparently people weren't getting paid for 3 weeks, and there was a whole dispute with, like, hotel rooms and people not being provided them and having to drive, like, an hour from town onto set, and yeah, there's a whole bunch of debacles with the filming.
Oh, whoops.
So Hannah retrieved three guns and ammunition from a locked safe on set and passed them out to the actors in the scene. Or sorry, she placed them on a little cart on scene. One gun was a plastic gun that could not fire any type of ammunition. One was a gun that was modified, making it incapable of shooting any type of ammunition. And the last gun was a .45 Colt revolver. Assistant director David Halls picked up the revolver and handed it to Baldwin. The scene had Baldwin drawing the revolver from his holster and pointing it at the camera, which was about 2 feet from the muzzle of the revolver. They were not filming at the time as they were rehearsing before they started the camera. Baldwin pulled the gun, pointed at the camera, when the gun fired a live round, hitting Halna Hutchins in the chest, exiting her back, and hitting producer Joel Souza in the shoulder. 911 was called and ambulances arrived 3 minutes later.
That's a great response time.
Yeah, especially for being 13 miles away from Santa Fe. It must have been fucking flying. Hutchins was flown to University of New Mexico Hospital, where she was pronounced dead on arrival. Souza was transported by EMS to a hospital in Santa Fe, where he was released the next day after the live round was removed from his shoulder. Which, there should be no live rounds on a filming.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason to be shooting actual live bullets. Rounds.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought the whole point was that they had, everything was supposed to be blanks.
Blanks or dummy rounds. Yeah, that's what they should have. But an investigation was launched into the shooting. Police found 500 rounds of ammunition, which consisted of dummy rounds, which, like, looks like a bullet, but when you pull the trigger, nothing happens. It's just a piece of metal with no gunpowder.
It doesn't come out of the barrel.
Yeah, nothing comes out. It's, sometimes they make like a snap noise because there's like a spring in there just to, but that's like practice rounds for like training at home. But so they had dummy rounds, blank rounds, and some live rounds, which is just dumb.
Why?
So dumb.
Don't have live rounds.
No.
There's no need for
it. Live rounds on a film set. In an affidavit, Halls claimed that the safety protocols for the scene were that he inspect all chambers of the revolver before handing Baldwin the revolver. He claimed he saw three rounds in the chambers, but did not inspect all chambers. After the shooting, he inspected the gun and saw four casings in the gun. So one of those was live.
Yeah.
Baldwin stated in December 2021 interview that he did not pull the trigger, but FBI forensic testing determined that the pistol did not have any malfunctions and was only capable of firing a round if the trigger was pulled and the hammer was cocked back. Because it's a revolver, so they have the little hammer in the back. Yeah.
Right.
So if the hammer wasn't pulled back and he still pulled the trigger, nothing would have happened. Because I think those are single action, and I don't want to get into the specifics of...
Okay.
Revolver types, but yeah.
Gotcha.
Hammer had to be pulled back and the trigger had to be pulled in order for anything to happen inside the gun. On January 31st, 2023, Baldwin and Gutierrez Reed were both charged with involuntary manslaughter. On April 20th, 2023, the charges against Baldwin were dropped, but had a stipulation that the charges may be refiled at a later date. Gutierrez Reed was found guilty and was charged with 18 months in prison. And on January 19th, 2024, charges were brought back on Baldwin, but on July 12th, Judge Mary Marlowe Sommer dismissed the case.
Okay.
And that is the story of the Rust shooting.
Okay.
So I want to say this, like, there was some speculation that some of the seven crew members that walked off site that day could have tampered with it, but the police said they found no evidence of this and the guns were locked in a safe. So I don't know how accurate that is. I just saw it brought up in an article. So
okay,
do with that information what you will.
So, I mean, Alec Baldwin, you know, I'm not coming to his defense and I'm not saying he was... I'm trying to put myself in his shoes. Like, he's trying to be a professional. He's been hired to do a job, and he's probably assuming everyone else is doing their job. They hired somebody, can't remember her name, but to be the person who's in charge of the weapons
and Gutierrez,
and the bullets and all of the stuff. He has to assume that she's competent.
There's two people that are supposed to inspect the gun before he even gets his hands on it. The armorer, Hannah Gutierrez, and then David Halls, the assistant director. The guy who was supposed to inspect and saw three cartridges.
Right.
Like, yeah, I don't think Alec... I mean, clearly the case was dismissed on his part, but I don't think he really had anything to do with it. Or,
I mean, based on just that superficial information, like, he, I don't see how he could have been charged. I mean, because then any actor who has a mishap because of somebody else could be charged with that mishap. It doesn't make sense to me. And that's not,
it's dumb.
I don't think that's right.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't. His case got dismissed, but.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, she definitely, if she's hired to be the armorer, she should have been, she should have known exactly. And it sounded like multiple accidents had happened. You should know if it's your job to be in charge of the firearms, you should know which ones are hot and which ones are cold, and you should make sure that there's no live rounds. I don't understand the point of there being live rounds there anyway, period.
Yeah, and there was also another incident that was really not preventable. There was, in November, a dude got bit by a brown recluse, so that...
Oh. Okay, well, let's charge the
spider.
Yeah.
He got necrosis and sepsis and had multiple surgeries, but it sounds like the whole filming of this thing was no good.
The movie was cursed.
Yes, cursed from the beginning. Yeah,
some bad stuff happened there. Eeks. Yeah. I don't know. I always wondered, I mean, when this whole story first came out and they said they were going to charge him, I was like, well, how was he being irresponsible? If he was being irresponsible, that'd be one thing. But
I don't think he possibly could have been. Like,
yeah,
I mean, his job was to rehearse what he was going to do, which is when they started filming, pull the gun out, shoot it towards the camera with a blank round, which like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it was supposed to have blanks or if it was supposed to be empty and have dummy rounds or whatever, but he was like, okay, I'm going to do this, pull it out, pull the trigger. Does it look good?
Yeah.
And then
right,
bullet came out. So
I feel bad for him. I feel bad for anyone who has an accident like that that is just so... so tragic, you know. I mean,
he didn't want to kill someone.
Like, no, he was just trying to do his job, and oh, it's just sad. I mean, he's gonna live with that forever.
Yeah,
you just think about the bad things.
Make it real hard to sleep at night.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. Enough doom and gloom. Give me a chaser that's happy. Change my palette.
Okay. So my chaser is a YouTube channel that I found. I don't really know if you can call it a podcast, but it's kind of like, I'm not going to call it a podcast, but it's called Drumeo, D-R-U-M-E-O. And basically what they do is they get drummers from famous bands. Like my favorite episode was the Red Hot Chili Peppers one. They had the drummer, oh gosh, what's that guy's name? Chad something. But anyways, they get drummers and they play them a song that they've never heard before, but they cut out the drum part and they let them listen to it for a couple times, and then they have to create their own drum part for that song.
That sounds really cool.
It's really interesting to like see famous drummers and like kind of pull their own style out.
Yeah.
Like I heard one, he did the my gosh, I can't even find this. It's
so that sounds really cool.
My favorite episode was Chad Smith. He's the drummer for the Chili Peppers, and he did 30 Seconds to Mars, one of the only songs I like from them, but it's really good. They had the Megadeth drummer. They had like a bunch of people I've never heard of, but they're like really famous drummers, and they had...
Oh, I like that. That's a really cool concept.
Yeah, it's super cool. And then afterwards, they'll let him listen to the song with the drums in and be like, oh, wow, this guy did a great job, better than I did. And it's like,
oh, that's cool.
All, like, really nice about it. And it's just a cool think
have you seen any where the new version is really similar to the old version, to the original? Or are they all pretty different?
They're all like, I mean, I'm not nuanced in the art of drums because like they'll play it and the drummer will be like, oh, I should have done this. And I'm like, kind of sounded to me like you did that. But
I gotcha.
It's just like cool to hear the like difference between the two almost.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of it's fairly similar for like the melodies and stuff, but like when the big drum parts of the song comes up, those will vary like differently, and it's like, wow, that's interesting to hear their take about it. And you can kind of hear like at least for the Chili Peppers guy, I listened to them a lot, so you could tell like, yeah, this is Chili Peppers style. So
okay, oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I like that.
What's your chaser?
Mine is a watch recommendation for the show Missing You on Netflix. It is the newest short series by my favorite author, Harlan Coben. And we binged it pretty quickly. It's a good show. You know, it's kind of one of those. It's, if anybody has read Coben or watched any of his shows, they all are, you know, kind of mysterious, and there's like twists and turns and psychological thriller mystery kind of stuff. But it's a really good show. It's the newest one. It just came out on January 1st, I believe. So check it out. I liked it. It was good. It what's funny for me is that I have read all of his books, and then I have watched all of the shows, and you'd think that I would be able to tell you the ending because of the because I've read the book, but my memory is so shit that it's all brand new to me. I'm like, wow, I didn't see that coming. And I'm like, I probably should have, because it's probably based on, I mean, the show is based on the book, so the big pieces that happen in the show should have come from the book. But for me, you know, I can't remember the last time. I don't remember when I read the book, but I have read the book. But regardless, if you read the book and watch the show like me and you remember them, good for you. I don't.
Okay.
So it's a good show. I recommend it.
Yeah, all those shows are usually pretty good.
Yes, definitely. He's got a lot of them. So
yes. Well, I think that brings us to the end of today's episode.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us once again, everybody. Hope you enjoyed our stories this week and our cocktail. I know we sure did.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next week. Love you, Mom.
Next week. Love you too, bud. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.